You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. And we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. This first hour is going to be a commercial-free hour, except to say that both of our guests for the first and the second hour are going to be primary participants in the Conference of Branson that I've been talking about. We're going to give you more detail on that a little later in this show, but you're not going to want to miss it. And you know the ads for that, the billboard ads, are right there on the right-hand column of both Steve Quayle's site and my site. Click it on, register, because it will sell out. Well, you've kind of already heard one guest tonight, Steve Quayle, first, second hour. Dr. Tom Horn, first and second hour. Third hour will be Bob Griswold, where we're going to be talking about the failure of the pulpit, the 501, three C's. We're going to get into all that because there's some new developments and things that we need to discuss in that third hour. But in the first 2 hours, we're going to be talking a lot about transhumanism and related issues. And our two guests, like I said, are Steve Quayle. And Steve Quayle is he's certainly no stranger to this audience. He's been on the show multiple times. Steve and I are good friends. I respect his work to the nth degrees. I think in a lot of ways he's the godfather of our movement because he's been around long enough to see all the trends. He knows all the players. He knows where all the bodies are buried, so to speak. He's a prolific author and a very well-known, very popular radio personality. Dr. Tom Horn, CEO of Skywatch TV, also no stranger, I'm sure, to many of you out there. His good work is well known. He's a longtime television and radio personality. He's an author, publisher, and like I said, he serves as the CEO of Skywatch. He's written and spoken extensively about our primary topic tonight, transhumanism, and the implications of these biotechnologies for the future of the human race. This is really dire, and I'm going to say this off the top. I sometimes ask you to share stuff that I put out. This is almost a mandatory request. This may be the most important show I've ever done here on the Common Sense Show, and I've been at this for 10 years. This topic threatens all of humanity. This topic isn't specific to 5% or 50% of the population. This applies to all of us. Please share this so people can gain the wisdom and knowledge of Steve Quayle and Dr. Tom Horn. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having
us. Thank you, Dave.
Well, it's hard. This is such a broad topic. And in fact, let me introduce the show here. Just say this. I was recently teaching a Sociology 101 class, and I put the students in the camp of Ray Kurzweil for New Horizon Technologies, and they came across transhumanism, and they were universally repulsed by it. And gentlemen, I think if we can get the word out, I think we can turn humanity against what the globalists want to do.
Let me start and just introduce this whole topic, because Tom and I have been labeled, Dave, by some pretty prestigious people in the world that, number one, they obviously are atheists, slash, I question that, whether they're atheists or they're just basically hidden occultists, probably more hidden occultists, as being the leaders of the transhumanist resistant movement. Now, you mentioned Ray Kurzweil, and there's a whole bunch of authors. And at the end of the day, I'll begin this whole part of the segment of Hour 1 by saying Zoltan Isfahan, a very, very brilliant man, said pretty much, when you come to the logical conclusion of the transhumanists, They simply don't want to die, and they want to, if you will, build a better human than that which they believe has evolved to the state we're at, or devolved. And so what we're talking about tonight, I believe, are the two most important issues facing the church. People will ask me and send me emails, well, what does this do to, what has this to do with salvation? Everything. Because Jesus talked about the end of, if you will, the end of the age. He talked about the time when men would be seekers of pleasure rather than seekers of God. But when you go into everything now in the electronic world, in the computer world, artificial intelligence, every one of probably a thousand new terms are pointing to this. Basically, mankind will become the master of his own fate, apart from God, under the influence and instruction of Lucifer, who became Satan. And just as the Bible specifically states that Satan had his I will statements, the iPhones that we now have, and the, let's say this, the iMac, the I this, the I that, selfies, everything that we are seeing right now is pointing to the time that we are in those, if you will, those end days, as I am a firm believer, and so is Tom. Now, how long they last is open to God's foreknowledge and his ultimate control over time. But again, I want to share something. One of the words we're going to be talking about tonight, and we're going to cover a lot of territory, this is the single most important issue facing the church today. And there are very few people, and that's no surprise to Tom or I, that I think fully grasp the ramifications of what it means to the Christian faith, what it means to the human race, and how it basically is the greatest telegram, telegraph, and television preview of the extinction of man. So with saying that, I will turn it over to Tom, and then Tom, when you're done, you can turn it back. But this is, in my opinion, Dave, and thank you for letting us come on tonight, the critical issue that is, whether you like it, whether you believe it's irrelevant, it is going on in the world's laboratories, it is going on in the heavenlies, it is, the war is on for the human genome, and Jesus did not die for the aliens, and Jesus did not die for whatever robots might have the, if you will, the reflection of a human soul, because what they leave out in the whole discussion is God is a spirit. The Bible says God is a spirit, and we who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. He breathed into the dust of the earth, into the clay man, Adam, and Adam became a living soul. So, you know, the idea is this, is that they will try to do everything, meaning the transhumanists, the hybridizers, there's a new word, Tom, the hybridizers and others, to create, in my opinion, the monsters of antiquity. And no matter how you gloss it over, paint it with pretty paint, underneath is a rot, and that rot is the extinction of humanity. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, thank you for that new word, too. I'll put that in my quill forest, right?
Yes.
I have a whole lexicon of terms that have been invented by Steve Quayle, and a lot of them have to do with transhumanism. And by the way, Dave, thank you for introducing your students to Ray Kurzweil. His book, The Age of Spiritual Machines, was for a long time the leading book on the subject of transhumanism, and the whole idea, he's a utopian futurist that imagines that we're going to use emerging fields of technology, genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, synthetic biology. We're going to use all of these new powerful instruments, things like CRISPR-Cas9 for gene editing, to fulfill the promise that the Nakash made in the Garden of Eden to transform men into gods. Now, Steve and I have been identified by most of those well-known futurist communities out there as the leaders of the transhuman resistance. Not that we ever set out to be identified as such, but because we have been the leading voices from a conservative Christian point of view. Ray raising questions about the ethics. And both of us would say that there is a lot of good that will probably come out of some of these technologies, the cure to diseases, things like that. Our issues arrive when we start talking about modifying what it means to be a human to the point that they are no longer considered to be a human at all. In fact, two well-known terms in these communities is transhuman. So you're a human, but you are transforming into something else. And then ultimately, posthuman, where you're going to become something that is so different than what we even comprehend humanity to be that you are no longer considered to even be human. And that was the goal in the days of Noah, by the way. And Jesus prophesied in Matthew 24:37 that that would be the goal of the end times, too, as it was in the days of Noah. So shall it also be in the coming of the Son of Man. Well, so recently, Steve and I learned that the peer-reviewed science and religion journal Zygon, which is a really well-known, very well-respected journal, peer-reviewed journal, published an article that had been written by a professor at the University of London by the name of F. Jonathan O'Donnell, who runs the Department of Religion and Philosophies at the U of London, wrote an article, something like 30 pages long, a thesis, called Secularizing Demons, Fundamentalist Navigations in Religion and Secularity. And this article was brought to our attention because as soon as you get past his 16-cylinder title, what he starts talking about is Tom Horn and Steve Quayle and what he calls our milieu, which is the French term that basically means a community, and that Steve and I are the leaders of the transhuman resistance community. And then the entire article just goes into talking about us and our organization, Skywatch TV, Gym 6, the stuff that we do and the people that we work with. And basically he refers to us saying that we're anti-transhumanist apocalypticists, but that the community, the pro-transhuman community, is going to have to deal with us. They're going to have to pay attention to us or engage us in one way or another because O'Donnell opined that Steve and I probably represent a very large but maybe quiet percentage of the community. It's almost kind of like in the 2016 election where a guy like Donald Trump comes from out of nowhere and nobody anywhere gives him any chance of winning, but then we learn that there has been this very quiet grassroots of people out there that one way or another he identified with, and they gave him the presidency, and was, you know, more than 50% of the voters. Well, basically what O'Donnell is saying is Tom Horn and Steve Quayle are going to shake the snakes out of the trees, and you guys had better deal with them. So last year, our conference in Branson's at the big, beautiful Palace Theater, which holds almost 3,000 people, was sold out months before the event. It's probably going to sell out this year. I haven't asked Steve in the last couple of weeks where we're at on registration, but I know we're probably more than 50% already, maybe as much as 60 or 70%. And then in addition to that, we had live streaming last year, and we had close to 50 countries of people around the world that were actively viewing the presentations that we were making there. This year is going to be even more important in that we're really dealing with the name of this year's conference is The Hybrid Age, and I can go into explaining, and Steve can, kind of what is meant by that title. But we're also going to have one of the world's leading transhumanists speaking at the conference, a renowned scientist by the name of Hugo de Garis. And Dave, have your students, now that they've read Kurzweil's stuff, have them read Hugo de Garis's book, The Artelect War, because he's not a utopian, he's a dystopian, and he literally believes that as we move into strong artificial intelligence, we're going to give birth to AIs that are going to lead to a gigadeath war and literally billions of people. He almost sounds like an Old Testament prophet because he literally describes blood flowing through the streets up to a horse's bridle. In fact, I accused him of running from his calling because He was an avowed atheist. Now he says he's an agnostic because he can't deny order in the universe, which speaks to some kind of creation. And so we're moving him along. But he was, for 20-some years, he was the head of the Artificial Brain Development Center for China at Zion University. And he is a strong believer that we are going to give birth to strong artificial intelligence that day when an AI comes online with consciousness and believes that it is an I am that I am. And he thinks it's going to be very, very bad when that happens.
Well, Tom and Steve, one of the things that we discussed when this had come up previously in that class I had been teaching with the students, we talked about, you know, imposing mechanical devices in human beings. You know, hip replacements, you got stents, you got pacemakers. And the fundamental question came up, and I'd like to get your reaction to this. At what point does a human being stop being a human being and becomes more machine?
Well, I'll jump in here and then Steve can follow. Look, I'm glad you're asking this question because we are there now. This is not science fiction. This is not in 50, 60 years from now, maybe we're going to start brain machining, machine interfacing humans with the cloud and all that. This technology is being developed right now, and it's being driven, by the way, by the Department of Defense, by the Pentagon, by DARPA, the Brain Initiative that was started under Obama. Literally billions of dollars are being invested in the strategy of enhancing humans. Now, if you listen to the intelligence agencies that give information to, like our Department of Defense, our defense agencies, basically what they're saying is we wish we didn't have to do this, but China and Russia are rushing ahead of us in investments in this technology. And if we don't invest in, we're in a new arms race, is basically what they're saying. And if we don't invest in human enhancement technology, i.e. super soldier technology, that sort of thing, as well as robotics and drones and Terminator-like technology, if we don't invest in that, then in a very brief period of time, China and Russia and perhaps other foreign agents are going to impose their will on us, both in the marketplace and in the battlefield. So bioenhanced humans, to get back to your question, with cognitive abilities that have been under the design budgets and on the drawing board of military and genetic strategies, social engineering, for some time, is no longer sci-fi. It's here now. And our marriage with and dependent on machine intelligence is in the very near future. It's already started. We're testing this stuff on the battlefield in places like Afghanistan right now. I published, in fact, I'm getting ready to publish the fourth book by Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. He'd be a great guy, by the way, Dave, to have on your show sometime. His day job is working at the Pentagon. That's what he does. He's a contractor. He works for the Pentagon every day. They send him all around the world to teach small countries how to conduct war. And the last book that I, the book before last that I published by him was called Future War. And the whole book is talking about what he is allowed to discuss, because there are some things he can't talk about, in terms of both investment and technology that is being practiced, it's being experimented with on the battlefields right now, including mind-controlling robotic devices by thought alone, to be able to sit somewhere with a pair of high-tech, what do you call them, you kids use them for playing games and whatever, virtual reality systems, where you've got people that are being trained to sit and they're watching robotic warfare on a battlefield in some country where they're practicing this technology. And by mind alone, by thought alone, they've developed synthetic telepathy where the people watching the screen are controlling what these robotic devices are doing on foreign battlefields. So all of this is not futuristic. It's here now. The bigger question that I had raised before we went on the air was, when you get past a certain point and you are interfacing the brain with a strong artificial intelligence system, you have created a two-way gateway. meaning that not only is that soldier sitting there and controlling devices by thought alone because his mind is married to a cloud-based system, but that door has opened so that an outside influence could invade your mind, could invade your, you know, most philosophers think of the brain or the mind as the seat of the soul. And you know, for some of the people listening to this program, think back about when you were a kid going to Sunday school, and you would sing these little songs, "Be careful, little mind, what you think. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. Be careful, little eyes, what you see." Because these are gateways into the soul. Pornography illustrates that. What you see with the eye, the way it can affect brain chemistry, and the intake drives itself until it creates a greater and greater need. But some religious philosophers would say that also opens the door to supernaturalism, to be influenced by an invasion of supernatural evil. And so through transhumanism, we are set to extrapolate this issue to an entirely different degree. And I'm going to let Steve talk so I don't dominate the show, but when this comes back around, I also would like to raise the issue of ensoulment, which the Catholics are way ahead of the evangelicals in thinking about these terms. Some of the Jewish rabbis are also talking about it, and that is some of the human-animal chimeras that we're creating right now. It was in the news last week that we're creating sheep humans and different things like that for xenotransplantation, for organ transplants. But what the rabbis have asked is, if you take a cow and you humanize it, to what extent does the human that is having cow genetics integrated transgenically into its genetic makeup become something entirely different? When does it become something that no longer has a soul? And if the cow human doesn't have a soul, and the priest said this tongue in cheek, but if the cow human you've created doesn't have a soul, then can we burn it as a sacrifice? And what they're trying to do is illustrate the tortured ethics that we are getting involved with now. But look, this is happening all over the world. Tens of thousands of laboratories all over the world. Thousands and thousands of them in the United States alone. Every university in the United States right now has a transgenic laboratory where you can buy a mouse with human genetic material in it. So the Rubicon's been passed. We've went through the door. And the questions do need to be asked now, and thank God people like Dave Hodges are getting young people thinking about this stuff, because we need to get engaged.
One of the things that I think, Dave, in answering your question, God originally created mankind in his image, and he created them, Adam and Eve, and people can argue about that, but prior even to the creation of Adam and Eve, there was a pre-Adamic civilization. That's a war. Boy, you talk about, you know, the gap theory, that's a war. But all of the illustrations through myths, legends, oral traditions, every form of stele, every form of rock carving, rock drawing, petroglyphs, every form of transmission of information from previous ages always deals with hybrids. A combination of something that may have some human features, but it has a combination of the, you know, like a satyr or a unicorn or whatever. There's basically a combination, if you will, an unholy alliance. I'm on record as stating that the point is that anything that is modified beyond God's original. Look, I'm for the blind being able to see, the lame being able to walk, exoskeletons, endoskeletons. But what we're talking about, that would be, I would say, in the electromechanical realm. What we're talking about is something far more sinister, something far more penetrating, something much deeper to the very alteration of the genetic code itself. The CRISPR technology, gene splicing, and as just an interesting fact, if it hadn't been for a thermophile bacteria in Yellowstone Park in what's called Mushroom Geyser Pool, the gene editing of CRISPR-9 and the whole, if you will, Nobel Prize-winning discovery of Kary Mullis made for the possibility of basically editing anything into anything and producing just about any combination you can imagine. And that came out of the smallest bacteria in Yellowstone Park. And so the point is, everyone's worried about Yellowstone blowing a volcano. I tell them this, something beyond a volcanic eruption took place from a microbe in Yellowstone Park that has changed the history of mankind forever. So my answer to that question they're asking, when does an it, let's just call it an it, cease to be human? And the idea is simply that a good example is Jesus died for mankind. The Bible is very clear. Jesus didn't die for the angels that sinned. A casual reading of the Book of Enoch, the Book of Giants, some of the pseudepigraphal works, and Tom has a new Bible that he's giving away that is just a marvelous masterpiece. We're not going to talk about that in great detail, but the point being is it explains. So that's why I personally and Tom personally have joined ventures for the different projects we're doing, is because we're showing people that there's nothing new under the sun. And so when you deal with, we used to have the word, Dave, reprobates. Now we got reprobots, okay? And that's a reprobate robot. Because what you're seeing now is a whole transition. Tom, you remember when you and I first met and started on talk radio, it was pretty hard for people to imagine when I'm saying, hey, guess what, everybody? You're going to see the day when robots are going to come in, sex bots, and that was my term, 27 years ago. And you're going to see a flocking, you're going to see a fleeing, and then when you add virtual pornography, when you add sensory sharing, where literally the movie stars are already being, approached on this, on the maybe movie fallen stars, are being approached by certain people in this realm to be able to share their experience through shared thought processes. So when you start messing with DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, and all the different things that Sharon Gilbert's going to be talking about, and by the way, Sharon is a molecular biologist, a very, very bright and gifted writer, very bright communicator, and she'll be talking about that because she is, a molecular biologist. What is critical about Branson is this. Is, and by the way, Tom, just for your information, I think we just went over half point. The reason we're trying to get people to register early, and Dave, you are coming, obviously, there's quite a few people that are on talk radio because it's critical that people get to understand the full ramifications. And I also salute you, as Tom has, for explaining to students, because all a student knows about, basically the majority of them only think this, oh, cool, I'll be a superhero, and I'll be dealing at Branson with the whole genre of science fiction, but I'll be dealing with what I would term prehistory, annunciation of science fiction. Now, there's a mouthful. So we'd encourage people to go on the gen6.com website, and this one is spelled GENSIX.com, and they can put a /conference, or they can go on my website. It's a giant panel registration, because the thing is that the mansion in Branson, that's the name of the venue, is there's other venues going on in Branson, so we've started early. So that, obviously, the true legends, and the name of the entire conference is Transhumanism in the Hybrid Age, that people can get their hotel, motel reservations ahead of time. And that's why the decision was to make it the announcement in January, as opposed to waiting to March. And I can only say this, that it's going to be different. And, Tom, you know how it's laid out. It's going to be different than anything anybody has ever done at a conference. We will have, I believe, the most consistent integration of science, prehistory, and what I would call post-history, and the future combined, and show people and to literally lead them by the hand to show that there is such a nefarious entity beyond redemption, beyond reason, driven by pure will and hatred for humanity, that is orchestrating all the technology. And by the way, Dave, you were talking, and we were talking off air, Mike Adams, the Health Rangers channel, was taken off YouTube. I think he had 1,700 videos. Timothy Alberino, the director-writer of the Gen 6, my protege. He's been out in the jungles of Ecuador and of Peru. Our film team came from South Africa, joined with Tim in Peru, and I'm not even going to talk about that, but it all relates to transhumanism. And, Tom, I don't know if you saw it, but it says more and more scientists now. It's on the front of Drudge, I think, close to the middle column, and I don't have Drudge on my screen, are talking about taking LSD and hallucinogens. The realm of the spirit and the physical, there has been a veil that God placed between those two, if you will, a barrier. And every barrier is being torn down. And when I wrote the book, Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters, and then 15 years later, I think it was 15 years, I wrote the book, Xenogenesis, Changing Men into Monsters. The subtitle was, I think, even, I guess, an advancement. So we've got reprobate robots, we've got snuff bots, murder bots, in essence, if you will, techno-assassins, we've got the sex bots, and then we've got swarm bots, miniature bots, we've got smart dust. And the thing that I think is critical, and this is what's interesting, Tom, because as you read the milieu, the criticism from the people in that paper against you and I, they actually gave a very telling statement away, because the presentation that I'm going to be giving is on when inanimate objects take on demonic possession, demonic influence. A good example of that from history is the robot Talos or Talos. It's rumored that, forgive me, it's not rumored, it's recorded that Hephaestus built it under Zeus' command. Zeus, by the way, was a fallen angel. So the point is we're seeing this fallen angel threat. We're seeing the entire book of Enoch coming to pass. We're seeing the future as predicted in science fiction that has generally led to this. And Tom wrote the expose on the Vatican's acceptance, getting their flock, the faithful flock, prepared to baptize aliens. I'll give everybody the great bottom line in this. Aliens cannot be baptized. They are not created in the image and likeness of God. Now, obviously, some philosophical Jesuit would question that, but didn't God create all the beings of the universe? Well, that isn't relevant, because Jesus died on a cross, was resurrected from the grave, and we, in turn, are told in the Bible, and by the way, isn't it interesting, Tom, they attack at night and day, but then they have to use spiritual terms to even begin to articulate. How about Ray Kurzweil's book, Spiritual Machines, okay? And Dave, that is probably one of the most pronounced, declarations of future horror that can be made, demon-possessed machines. I think it was Stephen King had a book about Christine or something that made it into a movie, and I'm not sure if that's I could be wrong there, but it's a one where you have vehicles that are basically demon-possessed, cars, trucks, or there were a couple of them, you know, beyond Stephen King. But the point is that, and this is my question before the Lord right now, Lord, where is the transfer point? Where is the interconnect? What is it that will determine when those things become demon-possessed? So when you put this into the spiritual realm, and understand, Kurzweil already has brought the idea of spiritual machines. Now you've got the group. What's the name of that guy that wrote the treatise of, he's not the head of the Tom Horn, Steve Quayle fan club, the guy from Oxford?
F. Jonathan O'Donnell.
Yeah, Jonathan O'Donnell. But he's using the word demons. Let me clarify for people. I'll turn it right back to you, Tom. A demon is a disembodied spirit. According to the Book of Enoch, according to the early church fathers, who, by the way, all believed in giants in the Genesis 6 account, the idea is that a disembodied spirit was, for instance, out of the body of Goliath. People lose a very important point in talking about the Nephilim. The Rephaim are the giants, but the Nephilim, in my opinion, are the fallen angel progenitors of the Rephaim. There were giants in the land before the flood of Noah and after. And then we won't get into it tonight, but there's a whole period of time of the Golden Age before mankind was even on the earth. And when you hear about the fallen angels, and one group of them are the Gregori, and the Gregori are singing and begging God and asking Enoch to intercede to God on their behalf. And God says to Enoch, you know, basically, it's not going to work. I'm paraphrasing. It's not going to work, Enoch. And he's saying they should have been interceding for you. So the point is that we are at a time now where demon-possessed machines, the invisible is becoming visible. The barriers are down. As Tom Horn so, you know, opened the gates of my understanding with his statement years and years ago, the gates of hell were open. And it's a point to be made. When a gate is open, whatever is behind the gate is going to get out. And that's exactly what's going on. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, so, Steve, I'm gathering that you are a sociologist or you teach in that field. Is that like...
Well, my background's primarily psychology. I've been a therapist, been a professor, been a college basketball coach. I've worn a lot of hats. But I have my undergrad in soc, and I've taught that at the college level. But I'll tell you, and I wanted to interject this, a lot of these people who were repulsed by the topic, I asked them, I said, what if this would be responsible for amazing life extension? And you could live 150, 200 years, and you wouldn't be alone because your friends could live that long too. Would that make a difference? And to a person, they said no. They didn't want any part of it.
Well, that's interesting because if you read, and you can Google this, people listening to the show can Google this and read it, Professor Fukuyama, he is a conservative bioethicist. When I produced a documentary, by the way, called Inhuman, it's a two-time Telly Award-winning documentary film, and it's got world-leading transhumanists, but it's also got bioethicists, including members of the U.S. President's Council on Bioethics. It's got top theologians from around the world. A little bit later, I'll tell your audience how they can get it free. But it was during the production of that documentary that we did a great deal of emailing back and forth between us and people that work with Professor Fukuyama. His whole thing is that you wouldn't want to live for a billion years in a transhumanist condition. It would in his mind, it would be equal to being in hell for eternity. Because everything that makes us great as a species is what the transhumanists aspire to abandon. In other words, he goes into almost like the theology of suffering, right? Nobody really wants to suffer, but when we live our lives, we realize that our growth in empathy, what makes us a better individual, what makes us a better parent, what makes us a better friend, you know, quite often are actually the things that we suffered in life that tempered our steel. It made us better. It made us deeper. It made us, you know, more humanitarian. And so his whole thesis is that the very bedrock on which the utopian idea around transhumanism is premised would not just make us inhuman in the sense that we wouldn't be what God made anymore. We'd be monsters. We would become demonic because we would be so self-indulgent and lack in caring for other individuals. So I would just say to your audience, I'm kind of getting off track here, but I would say to your audience, go out and Google Fukuyama and read his rejections of the idea around transhumanism. It's very deep philosophy. It's very good. Now, I want to say something about the title of our conference, and then I'll move forward and kind of get back on what I was trying to say earlier about whether or not a transhuman would have a redeemable soul, which is a very important philosophical and theological question to me as a conservative Christian. I realize, Dave, that you have a broad audience and not everybody out there is a Christian, but I'll try to explain to them kind of where I'm coming from and why the University of London is terrified by me and Steve Quayle. But the title of our program, Hybrid Age, and you as a sociologist and with your background can kind of appreciate this because you've probably talked about some of these things too with your students. The hybrid age part part of the title of our conference means exactly what it sounds like. It means that what we have already been doing, and that most people in the community now are very familiar with, what we've been doing with genetically modified crops, for instance, what we've been doing with transgenic animals, which is mostly being driven by the pharmaceutical industry. You put human genetic material in an animal, you get around FDA regulations for human experiments to test new drug therapies, and that's what drives all of that. Human-animal chimeras, which are being created everywhere. They were back in the news again this week with the human-sheep chimera, again, for the purposes of xenotransplantation. So they all have reasons around why they're doing what they're doing, but we're crossing over species barriers. And it isn't, by the way, just at the embryonic stage anymore. That's what most of these labs would want you to know. Again, you can do the research. I can send information to people that want to email me and ask about it. We're in China right now. We're talking about adult humans who are having their genetic makeup altered using CRISPR-Cas9 type gene editing technology and so forth, and in changing them in ways that are not in line with only the eradication of disease, in other words, for enhancement purposes, something that God himself did not create. So that's what we're going to be covering at this conference, that what we have been doing with animals and crops and whatever, we now fully intend to do to humans. And again, this is not far into the future, sci-fi, Star Trek, whatever. This is today and right now. We're doing it now. By the time we hit the September conference, I'm hoping to be able to bring a transgenic animal to the conference with me. Steve's got roboticists that are going to be bringing things there. Gigantic. Maybe I shouldn't be giving up all this stuff. Steve can tell you if he wants to about what he's going to be bringing there. But the point is, we plan to do to mankind what we have been doing with animals and with foods. We're going to hybridize man via genetic alteration, nanotech, synthetic biology, human tech integration with artificial intelligence, brain machine interfacing, and so on. In fact, one of the scientists that I follow said it this way recently. He said this technology is going to insinuate itself into every sphere and every nook of human activity, from the manipulation of replication of DNA to incrementally integrating with technology, launching an era of change and innovation that we are now calling the hybrid age. He actually stole the title of our conference. And basically what people like that mean for the listener, think of it this way. If the first wave of modern history was agrarian and tribal, and the second wave was industrial, the Industrial Revolution and nationalism, and the third wave was informational, the invention of the Internet and handheld devices, and which created a transnational interconnectedness, then the hybrid age is the fourth wave. So we have now entered into the fourth new Industrial Revolution, if you want to think of it that way. And in this new era, human evolution is going to become human technology co-evolution. I think the way Steve said it a little bit ago, we're going to become part of the machine. The machine's going to become part of us. But now, with all this powerful new technology, such as the Chinese scientists who have already started gene editing adult humans as well as embryos using CRISPR-Cas technology, we've crossed over this line in the sand that, God help us, somehow one way or another, we have got to wake the church and conservative bioethicists up to speak out on these issues, because it isn't just gene editing humans. The average individual out there, if I use the term germline genetic engineering, they may not know what I mean by that. But that is what CRISPR-Cas9 will allow us to do. So what does germline genetic engineering mean? It means you wouldn't just change one species. You wouldn't just like take an individual and eradicate a disease in them by using CRISPR-Cas9 to snip out a bit of genetic coding that is causing cancer or whatever, you snip it out, or some other debilitating disease. Those are all possibly very good things, right? You take it, you literally just go in like a pair of scissors. It cuts the gene sequences, it takes out the bad information, it glues the two ends of the gene sequences back together, and voila, you've cured a disease. So that all sounds really good and dandy. But CRISPR-Cas9 technology and other forms, by the way, of gene editing now also have the potential to make permanent changes at the germline genetic level in sperm, in egg, in early embryo development, which means this. It means that everything born downline from that modified species will also be permanently altered. And this is why some conservative bioethicists are very concerned now, because they're saying, look, this is now the technology that could forever modify mankind. Not just change one individual. This could set in motion the eradication of everything that has been known to be the that version of that species from this point forward. And by the way, they've proven this. This has already been proven. A university in California, this is also called gene drive technology. If somebody wants to Google this, look up the experiments that were done out of the University of California, where they took fruit flies. And they proved that gene drive technology could permanently alter all versions of a specific species, not just change it, but drive out of existence every previous version of that entity and drive into existence a replacement version of that entity. And what they did was, to prove this, they took fruit flies, which are known to be born a particular color, like a dull brown or whatever their natural color is, and they used CRISPR-Cas9 to change at the germline level the sequence of information that leads to the color of that species, so that it became, I forget, it was either a bright blue or a bright red. I forget which one. I think it was a bright blue. And they did this in a controlled environment, and once that was introduced to the species and they began to rapidly procreate and multiply, literally within weeks, it had driven out of existence every natural fruit fly, and every fruit fly being born was now being born with this new color. And so what they were able to illustrate is that we could permanently alter basically any animal, any species, including a human, through germline genetic engineering. We have the power to achieve the goals of the early eugenics movement. Can you imagine if Hitler had had this technology?
Oh, yeah, it would have definitely come into Ravensbrück. Steve and Tom, let me just share this with you. As you were talking, I was reminiscent of a movie I took my son to see maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it was the Superman movie. And General Zahn and the father of Superman on their home planet were arguing. Superman was the first live birth in 300 years on that planet. And General Zahn said, "This is wrong. I was bred to be a general and kill our enemies, and everyone else is bred to do their job." Is this what you're talking about?
It absolutely is what I'm talking about. We now have the power to truly reassemble the very nature of humanity into post-human. It's not sci-fi. It's not someday. We have the technology right now to repeat what the Watchers did. Don't forget that in the Old Testament, the reason why God sent the fiat, why he sent the great flood, there's a reason why he did that. It's very clear in the scripture. He did that because it says all life, both man and beast, had been corrupted. And the whole Hebrew language there is dealing with genetics. That only Noah, and therefore by extension his children, had remained pure. And all of the language, Stiepeltatus, all of the language there, all of the Hebrew words within their context are talking about the DNA, the genetic makeup, that a genetic degradation, and through intermarriage by the offspring of the Watchers, eventually what you had was humans who couldn't even be redeemed. And had God not sent the great flood to wipe out everybody but Noah and start over again, that would have, all of humanity would have literally been lost, would have been irredeemable. And this, of course, raises this giant question about whether, you know, how far can we go down this road of genetically modifying and otherwise modifying humans, and could we reach a point where they no longer have a redeemable soul? So debate over CRISPR-Cas9, this technology, germline engineering, all these are the most critical issues facing the church today. And again, I'm not, by the way, I'm not being cynical. I'm not being critical of churches. But I am scared to death that I don't see really anybody but me and Steve and our milieu, which is why the University of London and the peer-reviewed Zygon said that people are going to have to deal with this, dealing with what is without doubt the most important theological, philosophical, critical issue, humanitarian, bioethical issue that the Christian community should be addressing today. And it does completely appear that the vast majority of the church is asleep at the wheel. They're not even talking. They're not even engaging
the
subject matter. And yet we're talking about literally setting in motion the downline offspring and nature and physical makeup of mankind being altered with no hope of reversal, permanently reshaping humanity's future. And it's not just me being hysterical. We've got respected proponents of germline technology. In other words, the guys that are opposed to me, like Dr. Gregory Stock, he believes that man can choose to transcend our existing biological limitations, and that we should. He's written extensively that there is no way in the world if we, and basically his approach is, look, if we, it's what you said to your students, Dave, if we can make humans better by adding new genes to their DNA, by modifying their current genetic makeup, shouldn't we do that? And go out and look up quotes by him where he talks about how we've spent billions, and mostly this is the military, but to unravel our biology, not out of idle curiosity, but in the hope of bettering our lives. And we're not about to turn away from this.
On that note, Tom,
we're not. As far as the secular mind is concerned, we've set sail on a course that we are not whatsoever not about to turn around from.
And Tom, I gotta interrupt you here because we're headed to the break at the top of the hour. And when we come back, I want to throw this back in Steve's court for his reaction. And I'll start the segment off with a quick anecdote from a former member of the NSA who described exactly what you're talking about. And he told me this 25 years ago. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with Tom Horn and Steve Quayle after a word from these sponsors.